Hi, and welcome back to Convergently Speaking. Today on the show, we're talking about revolutionizing your relationships using personality type. Hi, I'm Dan.
And I'm Caitlin.
So today what we want to do is basically an overview of the power of personality types when it comes to intimate, professional, or even just personal friendships and relationships. This is obviously not a new topic for the podcast, but we wanted to do an overview of some of the theory mixed with some real life stories of how powerful understanding your personality type and the personality types of those you relate to on a day-to-day basis can be. And in the context of this, we wanted to also introduce a new series which we're going to be doing on an ongoing basis, where we're going to have couples come on the show who know their particular personality types and basically talk about how this knowledge has played out for them, how it's helped them, and basically have an ongoing stream of case study examples of particular personality type matchups. So for example, we might have an ESTJ who's in a relationship with an INFP, and they'll come on and we'll chat about how understanding personality has been good for them, their journey, their challenges, where it's limited, and yeah, basically just have some fun exploring more deeply with a real life couple how personality has operated in their relationship.
Yeah, having some real life people and examples of how people have learned their personality types and shared that with their partner and how they use that in their day-to-day lives, how they maybe manage just the workload of life, how they interact and manage conflicts will be really interesting and hopefully can also serve as a tool to teach some of the deeper concepts of personality type as we see those real world examples and we can hear from people other than just us about how it helps them and what they've learned.
That's a really good point and goes to the next comment I wanted to make on this. With these couples and today as well, we're going to come at it from two angles or two levels. The first one being looking at the dichotomies. So within the Myers-Briggs system, the dichotomies of extrovert, introvert, sensing, intuition, feeling, thinking, and judging and perceiving. And the dichotomies are probably the most well-known part of the Myers-Briggs system. So for example, most people are aware that there's such a thing as an introvert and an extrovert. And a percentage of people are probably aware as well that there's thinkers and feelers. And this is all relevant and useful information. Understanding that you're a feeler and that your partner is a thinker has real world value. However, it doesn't paint the whole picture. And so we're also going to go deeper in these interviews into the cognitive functions and a bit more unapologetically getting more technical. So hopefully this will scratch the itch of those of you that do want to go deeper into the technical side of the system. And for those of you that aren't interested, that's absolutely fine. We will tag these episodes to make it clear that they're all part of this same series. So with that said, we want to basically spitball a bit now on different ways that the Myers-Briggs system can be approached and looked at to help you optimize and improve your relationship. So I've been interested in personality typology for many, many years. I often joke about how I learnt the Enneagram from cassette tape. I don't know, maybe 15 or more years ago now. However, the Myers-Briggs system was something I never really delved into until a little later on. I started by listening to the Personality Hacker podcast and then went through their profiler training program, partly because I wanted to use it professionally, but also partly because I was just so interested and intrigued by it and found it useful in my personal life. It may surprise you to know that I didn't actually study personality types specifically to work with couples. Deciding to work with couples was actually something that came online later on. And then through the process of starting to work with couples and observing repeating challenges and patterns and themes, it was just a really natural and organic thing to start pairing my personality typology knowledge with working with couples. And this isn't something that seems to be very commonly done. This isn't something I've met many people that are doing. And for me personally, it's become a bit of a mission to promote just how powerful understanding one's personality type and one's partner's personality type can be. However, what I've also come to realize is that there is a barrier of entry with this. So, for example, understanding that you're an introvert and your partner is an extrovert is quite useful. And if you're always wanting to stay at home on the weekends and relax and just recharge your batteries, and your partner is wanting to go out and be more social or even just be more active through the weekend, then understanding that this is because you're an introvert and they're an extrovert can be a huge game changer. And so there's certainly low-hanging fruit when it comes to using Myers-Briggs and applying it to your relationship. However, as I've already said, there's another layer to all of this, which comes when you start to look into and delve deeper into the technical side of Myers-Briggs and really gaining a grasp for the 8 different cognitive functions. There are 8 cognitive functions, and we primarily have 4 out of the 8 in our personality. So as this series evolves, I'm hoping that it will be a really practical and fun experience for people hearing firsthand from different individuals within a couple relationship talk about their cognitive functions and how those play out on a day-to-day basis and how understanding their cognitive functions and their partner's cognitive functions have been of use, have been of value. So I might throw it to you, Caitlin, to give us any anecdote that comes to mind in terms of Myers-Briggs around either the dichotomies or some story or anecdote around the power of understanding particular cognitive functions and how you've seen that play out.
Sure. Yeah, well, one example recently that I've become more aware of and has been more top of mind is, as we shared, we moved back to the US recently and we've been spending a lot more time with my parents. Really, I haven't had a lot of day-to-day interaction with my parents since becoming an adult because I moved away to another country at 19. So both of them are perceivers. So that's the last letter. They're perceivers, have a P at the end. And I am a judger. Dan's a judger with the J at the end. So perceivers are less sort of ordered in the outside world and they like more flexibility. They don't plan ahead as much and they just like things to be a little bit more free flowing. That's how they tend to manage their lives and their time and things. And judgers like more of a plan, more of a concrete routine and schedule. So now that we're having more day-to-day interactions with my parents and planning activities and holidays with them and everything, and as an adult with my own family and my own way of doing things, it's been super helpful to understand this difference that both Dan and I are going to want to plan ahead and want some structure and want a routine and not do things super spontaneously. And both my parents are going to operate more that way. They'll think of an activity to do sort of last minute and want to do it. So because we know that about them, we can just exist in that and not judge that they're doing it wrong or badly, but just realize that's going to be their way of operating. We have a different way of operating and be able to communicate around that. You know, sometimes it's fine to be flexible and it's good for us to be forced to be a little bit more flexible or spontaneous and do some fun activities we wouldn't have thought to do. But then also we're able to communicate and make decisions based on knowing, well, we have a plan and a structure. If their spontaneous plan doesn't fit within that, we can say no and not feel too bad. And generally everyone can understand each other that we're coming at it from different points of view. Yeah.
And if you're happy, Caitlin, to share, you're reflecting the other night on your childhood growing up, not knowing that you're a judge and not knowing that you like predictability and routine and connecting that to the environment that you grew up in with two perceivers as parents. And you're having some sort of aha moments and, I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth, some sort of validation around that. You happy to expand a bit on that part?
Sure, yeah, I can talk about that. So realizing because there's less structure and more spontaneity and more fluidity of the way that my parents operate, and I wanted to be a good kid and please them as a kid, especially my personality also just likes to keep people happy around me and please those around me. As a judger, I would have done better with, I suppose, slightly clearer expectations and less spontaneity. Because there wasn't a lot of structure around what was expected from me, I was kind of always on and kind of always ready to be asked to do something. And I have a hard time relaxing as an adult. And I think that's part of it. What I took from that as a child was I always needed to be ready to please. Not that I could sort of set some structure and have set expectations. And then once you complete that, you're finished. And so, yeah, so that was very helpful and validating to realize that now I can give that to myself. And I was also reflecting that I did really well at school and in sports and that kind of thing. And I think a big part of the reason that I did thrive in those situations was there were clearer expectations and there was more structure. And as I say, you know, they were just working within their own personality, and without knowing that information, they wouldn't have necessarily known that that was a need that I had unmet, because it wouldn't have been something that they would have been looking for. Yeah.
Yeah, there's no way they could have known that need because they didn't have the framework, which circles us back around to why this is such a profound and powerful framework. This reminds me of a period some years ago where I saw this perceiver judger difference highlighted in how I interacted with my professional world, professional life. And what I've realized over time is that there are some people that operate much more easily and naturally in a fluid type of a schedule. And so I remember when smartphones first started to become more popular and, you know, for example, email started to be available on people's phone and that kind of thing, I noticed that some people just kind of rolled with the punches and they were kind of happy to be able to sit at home on their lounge and shoot off a few emails. So, quote unquote, move into work mode and then seamlessly move back into relaxing mode. Whereas for another subset of the population, and I would fit into this category, it felt like the home and life domains were collapsing into one another. It took me a few instances of having escalating stress levels to realize that for me, I really need my life compartmentalized. And then I realized that perceivers in general, this is not a blanket rule, but perceivers in general function much more easily with less compartmentalization, and often they prefer it. And so, as I say, being in a relaxed, casual environment and doing a bit of work is preferable for them than having these clear delineations of, okay, now I'm working, I hit 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, and now I'm no longer working and I don't check my email. So I think really what I'm hearing from you, Caitlin, is that you grew up in an environment with two perceiver parents that could flow quite easily between, you know, relaxing, having fun, doing some tasks, switching between domains, whereas you could have benefited from some more clear delineation of when something was expected of you versus when you knew nothing was going to be expected of you for a period of time.
Yeah, yep, that's absolutely right.
I want to go with an example next that probably can be classified as a bit cliche, but cliches emerge because there's sort of a norm, a common pattern, a common archetype, and that's simply the archetype of the man that's a thinker and the woman that's a feeler. And this is a matchup that I see quite frequently when working with couples. So we'll go through and we'll work out their personality types, and it will come out that yes, the woman is a feeler type and the man is a thinker type. Now, as we've spoken of today and previous, there's different types of feeling and there's different types of thinking. But if we just come at this in the most simple, broad brushstrokes, the lowest hanging fruit with this, there's actually a lot even without delving into that level of depth, even just looking at this dichotomy, there's so much power and so much that a couple can learn about themselves, their partner, and how their relationship functions by simply knowing that they have this difference. And the way that I see this show up most often and the way that I explain it is basically that both parties in the relationship are fundamentally valuing different things. And so, for example, a common topic would be something to do with domestic chores around the house, dishes or washing clothes, or like more practical things like home improvement projects and that type of thing. And I notice that when working with a man that's a thinker around this topic, generally speaking, he'll delve into the specifics of the subject. For example, we have task A, task B, task C. They all need to be completed. They're all important. I think task A and B is most important. However, my partner, she's wanting to do task C. And he'll delve into some of the specifics, some of the pain points, etc., around that subject. And then I might have a situation where the woman who's the feeler jumps in and she doesn't necessarily respond to the specific logical, concrete, factual stuff that her partner's spoken of. She may even roll her eyes and think, oh yeah, that'd be right. He's gonna go and talk about all these tasks. But what about me? What about my feelings? What about the fact that all he wants to talk about is these tasks and I feel like he doesn't want to spend time with me? Or I don't feel like he even understands why task C is important. For example, I want to get the patio fixed up nice because we're having guests around for Christmas. And so at an emotional level, this is important for me. It's important to present well to my family. It's important that I can host people and give them a comfortable and hospitable experience. In this example, you can have two parties in theory talking about the same topic. However, the way that they discuss it, it almost sounds like they're talking about totally different subject matters. The feeler woman's focus more on the feelings and on the people aspects of the tasks, and the thinker guy's more focused on the actual practicalities and the actual mechanics, and can tend to neglect or not have on his radar the feelings and the emotions that accompany this subject matter. So it's quite difficult to give you the specific slash with the theory at the same time. And that's why we're actually going to have couples come on and talk about their own specific circumstances. There is more specificity to this that impacts how I navigate this. But continuing with this example, explaining to a couple that, hey, you're a thinker and you're going to prioritize these things, and actually your wife is a feeler and so she's going to prioritize these things, and really explaining, number one, how their brain is thinking about it and the fact that they're just simply valuing different things is important, and then secondarily that neither approach is superior or inferior. And what I usually say is that having a thinker and a feeler together in a relationship is, practically speaking, is actually really, really positive, because it means as a couple there's fewer blind spots. When you have a couple where both parties are feelers or both parties are thinkers, you actually have more inherent blind spots because no one's primarily got on their radar either the thinking or the feeling piece of the puzzle.
And that's one of those revolutionary things about understanding these personality differences, is that when you're interacting with somebody else and you have differences in how you see the world and how you think about things, that's naturally going to create conflict. And so if you don't know why that's happening, you're just going to keep having conflict. You're just going to think you're right, they're wrong, and only being able to see things from your own perspective. And we naturally just think our perspective is the way to see it and the way to think about it. And so once you can frame it and make the personality differences the bad guy in a way, you can A, just see what's going on. You can understand that there is a different way to think about things, and you know, it might still be frustrating and you might still think your way is right, but you're able to expand your view. And then also seeing your own blind spots, you're able to see the positive sides of that difference that initially maybe just annoyed you or caused conflict, but then you're able to see what's the positive aspect of that. What's my partner bringing in a positive way to the situation? Like in that example, the thinker might be able to go, oh, okay, yeah, I can see I have a blind spot with people, and I can see if this project was unfinished still at Christmas, that wouldn't be very good. But I'm not naturally focused on how people are going to feel in our house. So great, thank you for bringing that. And when it really comes down to getting stuff done, the feeler can be grateful to the thinker for focusing on the practical, focusing on the what needs to get done, and sort of use that strength towards what is important to them as well.
Love it. That was really good. I don't think we really need to add any more to that piece. So we'll leave it there for today. Hopefully that gives you a bit of an idea of what this upcoming series is going to be about and going to involve, to either whet your appetite for more or to scroll on by if this sort of thing is not of relevance. But personally, I'm really excited to have couples on to really, really dig into some of the nuances of what is happening in people's specific situations. We already have a few courageous couples booked in to record, and our goal is that over time we'll be able to create a backlog of interviews with different couples of all different varieties and matchups to serve as almost like a resource library for people who want to understand more about their own relationship. And so the idea is that you could find a podcast between a couple where they have the same personality matchup as you have with your partner and use that as sort of a resource guide to help you along the way. So if there is a particular personality matchup you'd like us to talk about, feel free to email us. And in addition, if you and your partner would like to come on as guests, if you both know your personality type and have found understanding personality type to be helpful, feel free to send an email about that also.
So thank you for listening to Convergently Speaking today. And as always, stay curious.